Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Our thanks to Adams Road Band for that musical introduction. Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. This week, we were looking at a very short article in the August 2019 edition of Ensign Magazine in the Portraits of Faith section, and it highlighted the spiritual conflict that a young black member by the name of Tamika Barnes went through once she learned about various reasons for the priesthood ban not allowing those of African heritage to hold either the Aaronic or Melchizedek priesthood, which is unique to The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. She explains that what kept her faith was the belief that the Book of Mormon was true. And as we explained yesterday, I don't know if that would really help me in the doubts that I may have had about that particular doctrine, but it seemed to help her. In the same edition of Ensign, there is this little section on page 6 that not only references the digital version of Tamika's story, but it also gives another link to Elder Edward Dubay, who is a 70, and he also talks about his struggle with this priesthood ban once he learned about it. Now, here's what's fascinating, Eric. I've long said that the two issues of history that are very important if Mormonism is to be true is the Book of Mormon that Tamika Barnes referenced to and that she felt kept her faith intact. But Dubay is going to pick another aspect of Mormon history, and that is the first vision. That's what's going to keep him in the Mormon church. It's interesting. Those are the two issues that I wrote about in the book, Sharing the Good News with Mormons. That was my chapter. Chapter 7 starts on page 91. It's Joseph Smith's first vision and the Book of Mormon, the historical approach. But as you can see, and I think there's no coincidence as to why these two individuals were picked for this section, as short as the article really is, because I think it highlights two very important historical aspects of Mormonism that if they are not true, as Mormon leaders have stated, the church is not true. Let's look very quickly at what Elder Edward Dubay says in this article that's found online called Blessed in Every Way Possible.
He writes, "The first time I heard about the restriction on black men holding the priesthood, I was on my mission. I was baptized in 1984 after the restriction had already ended. 2 years later, I was called to serve in the South Africa Johannesburg mission." He talks about how his companion, Elder Francis Jack, and he visited a less active sister. Her husband was a theological professor from another church. He asked us why the priesthood had been withheld from men of black African descent. He said many things that bothered me, things I had never heard before. When I walked out of that room, I felt very low and very discouraged. Elder Jack and I rode our bikes back to our apartment without speaking. When we got there, he looked at me and said, "Elder Dubay, what is wrong with you? You seem very disturbed." "Didn't you hear what he said?" I responded. "How could this happen?" "Elder, do you believe that Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ appeared to the boy Joseph?" "Yes," I said, "but what does that have to do with this?" "It has everything to do with it," Elder Jack replied. "We believe in revelation, don't we?" I thought about his words and what the professor had said. That night, I woke up in the middle of the night. I felt happy and at peace.
Now, based on this notion that Joseph Smith had an encounter with God the Father and Jesus Christ in 1820, and in fact, it goes on in the next paragraph to say, the answer to every gospel question ties back to what happened in 1820. The problem is, it didn't happen in 1820. What Joseph Smith describes could not have happened in 1820. Now, I'm not saying that his story that he saw God the Father in Jesus is tied to this bad dating, but the fact is, what do you do when the Bible and the Joseph Smith translation, both in Exodus 33:20, makes it very clear that no one can see God and live? how did he have an encounter with God the Father and live if the understanding, according to Mormonism in Exodus 33:20, shows us that he couldn't have done that? Now, first of all, he's placing his faith on an event that he believes took place in 1820 that didn't happen in 1820, because the revival that Joseph Smith describes took place in 1824, which means that the first vision, if we could use the correct date, took place after Joseph Smith allegedly was visited by the angel Moroni. Why doesn't the church start teaching the proper date? They can't. And the reason they can't is because you can't have Moroni come before the first vision. That's just not how it works in Mormonism. But yet, because of this event, that makes all the things that he heard from this non-Mormon professor, this theological professor from another church, that makes it all go away. What have we seen in these two stories? One with Tamika Barnes, who holds on to the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon. That makes all the struggles of the priesthood ban go away. When it comes to Edward Dubay of the 70, what makes all those problems go away? A belief that there was a first vision, that Joseph Smith had an encounter with God the Father in Jesus Christ. You know what we call that, folks? That's cognitive dissonance. These are two examples of cognitive dissonance. Now, let me read you a definition of what that is, and you tell me, are these not examples of cognitive dissonance in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? This is a definition. In the field of psychology, cognitive dissonance is the mental discomfort experienced by a person who holds two or more contradictory beliefs, ideas, or values. This discomfort is triggered by a situation in which a person's belief clashes with new evidence perceived by the person. When confronted with facts that contradict beliefs, ideas, and values, people will try to find a way to resolve the contradiction to reduce their discomfort. So how did Tamika Barnes resolve to reduce her discomfort with the contradiction that she heard from probably locals in her ward and what she probably read on the internet? She doesn't give specifics, but she did say she read things that bothered her. What did she do? She clung to her belief that the Book of Mormon was true, and that made everything go away. But as we pointed out yesterday, if you look at the Book of Mormon and what it says about all are alike unto God, and that there is no color distinction, according to what the Book of Mormon says in 2 Nephi 26:33, how could Tamika Barnes explain that away? I would think that the fact that leaders in her church were teaching these doctrines, that would have bothered her. How come they didn't read this for what it actually says in the Book of Mormon? You have the same problem with Edward Dubay. Instead of the Book of Mormon, however, being his go-to source to keep him within the faith, he goes to the first vision. As I said earlier, these are the two most important events in history in the minds of the Latter-day Saints, that if these events are not true, the Mormon Church is not true. Gordon B. Hinckley made that very clear when it comes to the first vision, and Jeffrey R. Holland made it very clear when it comes to the authenticity of the Book of Mormon. So instead of addressing the facts behind the discomfort of this priesthood ban, they ignore them and would rather cling to something else that they think resolves the problem in their mind.
Bill, we have an article on our website. Actually, we have several articles regarding the first vision, but one called "Do the First Vision Accounts Coincide?" We talk about the history of how the first vision came about. It really doesn't come about until a couple of decades after what supposedly took place in 1820. And you can go to our website and go to the articles. We have a half dozen plus articles on that. But let me give you a quote from Gordon B. Hinckley. You mentioned Jeffrey Holland, but I'm going to give you one from Hinckley from November 2002, The Ensign, which would be a conference edition, page 80. He said, "Our whole strength rests on the validity of that vision. It either occurred or it did not occur. If it did not, then this work is a fraud, Upon that unique and wonderful experience stands the validity of this church. He also said in Teachings of Gordon B. Hinckley, page 227, that becomes the hinge pin on which this whole cause turns. If the first vision was true, if it actually happened, then the Book of Mormon is true. Then we have the priesthood. Then we have the church organization and all the other keys and blessings of authority which we say we have. If the first vision did not occur, then we are involved in a great sham. It is just that simple.
He also used the word blasphemy in another statement, and that always fascinated me that he would use a word like that, because I think what Gordon B. Hinckley was at least admitting when he used that word was that if Joseph Smith did not in fact see two personages that they interpret to mean two gods of three within the Godhead, we are engaged in blasphemy. Why? I think Hinckley knows. The Bible really doesn't teach tritheism, that there's three gods within one Godhead. I think Hinckley knew that. If we're going to believe as Latter-day Saints that God the Father and Jesus are two separate gods, two among three, we are engaged in blasphemy because the scriptures, as is known among Christianity, are contradicting our conclusion. Blasphemy. Why would he use that word? Why would he just not say, well, we could be wrong on this? No, he uses the word blasphemy because I think Hinckley understood just how seriously different the Mormon view of who God is from the rest of Christianity.
Again, I find it fascinating how both of them had problems with what they found out because they apparently didn't know very much before, and then they start to do some reading up on it. They were bothered by it, but they had to go to these so-called historical events to make their faith go back to being positive. And yet, we have many, many problems with the Book of Mormon. We have many problems with the First Vision. I don't think it's going to solve their problem by relying on those to make them think that the LDS Church is the one true church that has brought restored Christianity back to the earth.
I think you're right, because there are a lot of problem areas in both of those accounts. Again, these articles don't give us a whole lot of detail. It's very vague as to, for instance, in the case of Tamika Barnes, who are the some people that she's referring to that told her some things that bothered her? And who is she referring to when she says that some people in the church can be wrong? Is she implying that it's the leaders? Because I don't know if anybody who's a part of the general authorities in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints would make that so specific. Even when Dieter F. Uchtdorf made the comment several years ago in a general conference message that leaders can be wrong, I don't think he was referring to the general authorities. I don't think he would say that about himself or any of his colleagues in the leadership of the church. Maybe that's perhaps how it was interpreted by some, but I don't know if that's really what Dieter F. Uchtdorf was referring to. Either way, I think it's very clear that these two cases in this article, the August 2019 edition of Ensign, is giving us some very clear examples of cognitive dissonance in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.